get to work. My name's Don Corley. That's that thing right down there. Welcome. I'm going to do a series of five sessions this week, three of them here in the lecture hall and then two out on hikes on Thursday and Friday. And I'm sorry if I misled you by... Oh, sorry, it's 6:15. So if you'd like to start the recording, please feel free. And those of you who are here, sometimes you may mistake my terror for enthusiasm. I don't do this as a rule. The only place that I lead sessions is here at Holden because people are so welcoming and good-looking and thoughtful and intelligent. So I won't teach anywhere else. Each of us that is on the teaching staff this week, I think, feels we're on a mission. Judy is doing Bible study, and if you're a Lutheran, it seems reasonably important to me that you learn the foundational document of your faith. That seems important. Cliff is teaching on health and wellness. That seems to me to be important. Trish is doing art, and although I'm a geologist and a scientist at heart, if I had to choose between a world without geology and a world without art, I choose the world without geology. So art is important. And what Cindy is going to talk about later, writing, and what Jim Bodine is going to come in later on this week and talk about writing, any of us who have ever kept a journal or have gone through a hard time and written our way out of it know that writing is crucial. So I feel I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here about trying to explain to you why geology is so important to you as art and writing and health and wellness and the Bible. That's a fairly high bar that they set. So you've already seen, I'm willing to stoop to bribery.
Now we haven't gotten that anywhere else.
And there's plenty more there. Pleading and cajolery, which is a word I just made up about 10 minutes ago when I was practicing this talk. And there's a reason that I'm only a little bit bashful about sort of preaching for geology. And as I was telling Lanny and Connie earlier today, part of that reason is I've had more fun at my job than anyone I've ever met, or anyone that anyone I've ever met can tell me about, because I lucked into going into geology. And so tonight, mostly what I'm going to do is an hour-long commercial for the study of geology, or the practice of geology, or learning about geology. There's about two technical things I'll tell you, or maybe just one. And then tomorrow and Wednesday, if you're here, if you decide to come back, we'll talk in very broad strokes about doing geology. And then Thursday we'll take a walk to 10 Mile, and then Friday we'll talk a little bit about the mine remediation. I came here first time May 1997, up on the boat to study the groundwater on the other side of the creek. And from 1997 to 2009, I probably have been in the village 6 months over that time, mostly doing mine work, a little bit of time as a guest, been on volunteer teaching staff a number of times, and have done this Elder Hostel Holden Elder Village week since 2002. About half of those times I've been with Cliff and Gay. So one of the great joys, one of the great gifts that I've been given, that I will talk about here as we go along, is the ability to meet the people that I have, not simply the geologists that I've met, but the other people that my practice of geology has led me to. So with that, and I'm going to blaze, I'm going to talk, and in about 40 minutes I'll take a breath, and then I'll probably run over a little bit, and then we'll go to Vespers. So usually I try to take some play of the summer theme and use that in my talks. Since I didn't know what the summer theme was this year a couple of weeks ago, I was trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? And I was sitting in my apartment and I looked over against the wall to where my golf clubs were standing, and I thought, Mark Twain, Hang on. Whoa, jeez. Hang on a minute. I pushed the wrong button. And what did Mark Twain say?
Golf is a good walk room or something like that.
It's easy to quit smoking. I've quit 1,000 times.
Golf is a good walk ruin or something.
Yeah. Mark Twain said golf is a good walk ruin. I said geology is a good walk improved. That's 2011. Oh, gosh. All right. We'll, I'm really good at technology. It's
press F5.
I gotta quit pushing the wrong button on the one thing I've been given here. How is geology a good walking proof? When we do geology, we solve puzzles, we see and experience beauty, we get exercise, we experience community, we consume beer or ginger beer or root beer or orange soda. We tell old stories and we live and create new ones. And in my case, I've been able to travel and experience variety, not so much fame or fortune yet, but I still have hopes. This is the one sort of technical piece of information I want to cover tonight, and I'm going to cover it again tomorrow, and then Wednesday, and then Thursday. When I first started teaching this session in 2002, I'm probably still in my files there. I've got the big piece of paper that I wrote this down on, and I still believe it to be true. Geology is an observational science. We do observations of rocks, landforms, and the relationship of rock units to one another. Once we've made our observations, we can make interpretations or advance hypotheses. If you can remember observation, interpretation, and hypothesis, you got it. Now, another famous geologist, Yogi Berra, said you can observe a lot just by watching. So observing isn't as hard as you make it out to be. Why should you study geology? I know I there's two parts to this talk. First is the part where I tell you why you should do it, and then the second part is sort of my testimony about what has happened to me because I've decided to study it. Proof comes from the highest secular authority. This is the part that if Gay could... Can you read that from up there?
Yeah, I can read that, sure.
This just always sounds better in Gay's voice to me. So.
Wait, do you want me to start with Dear Ann Landers?
Please.
Dear Ann Landers, this letter, my first ever to a columnist, was sparked by your column about the geologist's wife, who asked, are all geologists the very embodiment of all the virtues and qualities that are universally admired in humankind? Have they alone of all the professions achieved a state of grace far beyond that ever speculated by history's most hopeful philosophers and theologians? The answer is, absolutely.
Now, I don't know. Did Ann Landers ever give out any good advice? Opinions do vary on this, though. The two key parts here are these last two panels from a old Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. Oh yeah, what do you want to be when you grow up? Every job requires some math. That's not true. I'll be a geologist. Yeah. And then the father says, that's not really a job. Why should you study geology? Because most of the positive things that a doctor, in this case Cliff, will tell you to do for a long, healthy life can be accomplished by studying geology. Stay mentally challenged. Do aerobic exercise. Participate in community. Use alcohol in moderation. Experience beauty and variety and surround yourself with positive people. Now, I'm not a geology fundamentalist. My belief is any other thing that you want to partake in that does as many of these things as geology does, then do that instead. Let's see. Let's take stamp collecting. Maybe, no, maybe, probably, yes, yes, and yes or no. Anyway, one of the other things that I do in my spare time is I read military history, and I have some hopes that at some point in the future I'll be able to go to the battlefield of Gettysburg and figure out what people did as they were trying to figure out how to win that battle. And walk across, and I would be doing it with other people, and the head of the National Monument there. In this case, I'd be having a soda, experiencing beauty. There's some pretty country there. Variety, maybe yes, positive people, probably. So I'm not a geology fundamentalist, but though, is there anything, the only other thing that I can think of that's going to be on your list is stop smoking, and that's kind of a negative thing. So is there, you can think about that, Cliff, for tomorrow. When I started teaching this, the thing I focused on was the puzzle solving. And after about 8 years, I realized that some people who were here weren't necessarily here for the puzzle solving. They were here because we were going to take a walk and it was going to be a nice day. Or they were here because their spouse was here and they felt that they should go and do what their spouse did. So I've tried to sort of branch out and talk about more things that we can do. As a profession, Rio Tinto, people who I work for now in Australia as a consultant, I don't know that they care very much about my experience of community. Right? What they want is a problem solved. So that's what I do. So some of the puzzles that I have to solve are theoretical in nature. Here's a series of calculations that I did a couple of years ago for work here at the site. And I think any time you have that sine H minus 1, the inverse hyperbolic sine, that's pretty complicated. And of course, this is all straightforward enough for you guys that there's really no point in going into it anymore. I'll maybe finish that story a little bit when we get to it. Practical puzzles. This is me standing on a concrete helipad in Indonesia that we had flown into the year before that we were going to try to fly into again this year. And there were going to be some problems there, which is I'm 6 foot tall, so there had been 8 feet of growth in that intervening year. So before we tried to put a helicopter in there, we decided we should probably clear that helipad. That's not very theoretical, that's very pragmatic. In geology, most of the puzzles that we have to solve are relating to rocks, like what is it? What is it doing here? If you're in school, it's how can we piece this together so we can get a good grade? In the work that I do now as a hydrogeologist, it's is there water in there and can we get water out of it? Or is there water in there that's contaminated and where is it going? What kind of rocks are these? Why have they been put up on the side? Again, from my perspective, is there water in there? If so, can we get it out? Sometimes rocks tilt the other way. This is banded iron formation in Australia where I live now. So how can we get this out and mine it and make money off of it? Here's another. This is driving up the Columbia River Gorge. Here's a couple of different rock types. We have this big mass of rock on top, but it seems to be sitting on some loose material. How does that happen? In this case, this is off the flank of Mount St. Helens. What are these rock types? How did they get there? And can I pick up that quarter when nobody's looking? Some of the puzzles that we solve are pretty complex. This is me a long time ago. That's a hydrocarbon product, gasoline in this case, that was floating on top of the water table. This is at the old Texaco refinery in Casper, Wyoming. This little glass, this is a blown glass tube that you could run down a well. And because this material was floating on top of the water, we could pull it out. This is a sort of schematic representation of the facility that we were working on. Whoa! Hang on. Go back. And this was the material that we pulled out of each of the wells that was sort of in these different locations underneath the facility. And so you can see that down here in this one corner, the petroleum was much better, so they were pumping it out of the ground, sending it down the road to the Larco facility, re-refining it and selling it. So this, again, most of my early work was done in contamination, and apparently there was a huge duck that lived at the refinery as well. Somehow we survived the trip, so... I don't know whether this is a complex problem or not. This is a huge sinkhole. This is in Mexico. This is a city block. This is the edge of a block here, and a couple of houses had fallen into it. Here's a street coming in from here, and here's a full street going that way. I don't know whether that's a complex problem or a really easy problem with a really complicated solution, which is how much stuff can we find to throw in there?
What made that sinkhole, Don?
That sinkhole is made of some sort of limestone material, and the water just sort of ate out from underneath it. Probably they had had a storm there recently that had undermined from below, and there was enough weight on top that the whole thing just fell in. This is a road cut near Banff, Canada, with some fairly complicated geology involved there, which is why I got a geology and into hydrogeology. This is a road cut along I-70 in Colorado, where again, here's a number of layers of rocks that we'll talk about tomorrow as being sedimentary rock and either being laid down in the lake or in the ocean. They were laid down flat. They had to be tipped up on end. They had to be brought up over a mile's elevation because we rode over a mile here. The top had to be eroded off, and then a big mud flow or something came in on top of it. If you guys are really good and come to class tomorrow on Wednesday and we go on the hike on Thursday, you'll know this stuff. Some of the solutions that I've had to implement over time have been fairly technical and fairly complicated. This piece of equipment down here is called an ADCP, an Acoustic Doppler Current Profiler. And this is in a bay in Indonesia. And what we did, this thing sends out sound waves and then takes the return. And depending on whether the return comes back expanded or compressed, the current is moving one way or the other. And we can calculate or we can assess how quickly it's moving. This whole thing, this whole string, gets tied to a bunch of dead weight right there, gets dumped off the bottom of the, or off the back of the boat, and sits in the water for 3 months. And then you come back and there's a radio frequency that opens a little hook, or hopefully opens a little hook right here. There's a float on the end here that floats the thing back up to the surface. You recover it and you download the data. If not, you have $30,000 of equipment sitting in the water somewhere. Another piece of water monitoring equipment, I don't do strictly geology, and sometimes I don't even do strictly groundwater. I did some work offshore of Indonesia. This thing would sit on a cable, or would hang on a cable at the one end, and we would run it down through the water and get some information about the water column, the temperature of the water, the dissolved oxygen concentration, and how much light would pass through the water. In this case, they were disposing of their tailings into a big, deep trench, and they wanted to make sure that everything was going in the trench. Sometimes our solutions are really simple. This is right down by the vehicle bridge, and if we're solving puzzles and we're doing it professionally, and someone says, how much water is going somewhere? We can't say a little bit or a lot. We have to put a number to it. This is a piece of equipment called a flume. And if you collect up all the water and put it through the flume, whatever the height of the water in the flume is, now you can make a calculation as to how much water is flowing. And so down here in the library, there are 6 or 8 volumes. And upstairs, there's another 10 or 12 that have all kinds of information about how much water is flowing, where it's coming from, where it's going, what the chemistry is. That's what I spent a lot of my time doing up here. And of course, with something this simple, you have to have a lot of people. Not only are there 3 people there not doing much, there's a guy off to the side who was with the Forest Service watching us not do much. And then I was the guy taking the picture of the guy watching us not do much. Anyway, this is me just down the road a ways, and I'm doing something really technically complicated, calling putting water in a hole. Now, this is the field part that big long calculation complicated thing was the quantification of. If you have something that's really permeable, you have to pour a lot of water in the hole to keep this tube. This tube is drilled down, in this case, about 50 feet and seated into the glacial till that's at the bottom of the valley. So you sink it in there, and if that material is really tight, you don't have to put very much water in. if that material is really loose, really permeable, you have to get a fire hose. So in this case, it was how much water am I putting in times the inverse hyperbolic sine times a bunch of calculations, and then you come out with a number that talks about how permeable or impermeable that layer is at 50 feet below ground surface. So in this case, the field portion of the deal was really simple. The calculation part was, that's the only time I've ever had to do that. Here's sort of I like this because it's the connection of new technology taking water chemistry samples and water quality information kind of with an old school transport. This is a hand excavated boat. This is in Ghana in 2007 or 2008. Now we're kind of out of the part about why you should be doing geology, except I know I have a head start on you because I've been doing this for a long time, but what I hope somewhere in here and somewhere in the 10 or 12 years that I've been doing this, that someone will get sparked and go, dang, I want to go to Ghana and be in a boat and do that stuff. And again, that's me getting paid a lot of money right there, right? Wearing a ball cap and dirty pants and having a blast. And so I kind of feel like if I just keep that to myself, maybe it won't keep happening. But if I tell you guys about it and get co-conspirators here, that maybe someday one of you, I was thinking before coming up here that my Geology 1 course, when we first started teaching this, I thought, I'm going to teach these guys geology. In 5 hours, we couldn't do it, right? Because a Geology 1 course is 3 hours a week for 10 weeks. That's 30 hours in class. And then you spend, what, another 15, 20 minutes reading the book. And so I can't teach you geology while we're here. What I can do is hopefully, either through beer or pleading or cajolery, get you interested so that you'll go to your local community college and learn some geology and then maybe go to Ghana and get a ride in a boat. But sometimes when you try to solve puzzles, sometimes you're wrong. That's my godson, Daniel. He was quite young at the time, and I know how he feels, because sometimes. This is me in Indonesia in 1994, 1996. There was this big scarp along the creek where we found a bunch of seeps, which is what I was doing, was going and sampling the seeps there. So two of my colleagues are collecting the water, and then we would send it back to the laboratory to find out what the chemistry was. So when I went to Ghana in 2007, in the dry season, and we couldn't find any seeps, I was with my colleagues there, and I said, this is the place. We're going to come back here in the wet season. There's going to be seeps coming out of this thing. This is in the wet season, and there's nothing there. And so we came back later in the wet season, and there's still nothing there, and by now, my colleagues are starting to mock me. Okay, it's a dry year. Next year we'll come back, and there still aren't any seeps. And then the fourth time we came back, and now they're thinking it's hilarious that there's no seeps there. So in this case, there are no seeps to be had there, and that was one of the... I made observations. What do you do next? Interpretations. I advanced the hypothesis I was wrong. Those things happen. Sometimes, though, in my career, I've come up with unique solutions. In this case, I saved a client between $5,000 and $6,000 worth of work by pulling something out of a well after having a dream or waking up and having the solution and going to Walmart and buying about $30 worth of equipment, and about 10 minutes later, I had saved the client $6,000. So I'm obviously very happy. Obviously, it's a long time ago because there's no gray in my beard. Now we move into the other things that may be more alluring for some of you. Beauty may be experienced. Either from the rock or the rock outcrops or the form of the landscape or from just things that happen. This is a piece of gneiss. This is in Copenhagen outside the Natural History Museum. This is a rock that you can find on the, at the base of the trail going up to Copper Basin. This is an end view of that rock. If you look at the side, there's this sort of stripe pattern here. And so one of the things we'll talk about tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday is, what does that mean? Here's a piece of core that we drilled up down the road a little 2 years ago, probably. And while this holds some interest to me geologically, if you could steal this piece of core and throw it in your pack getting out of here, about half of you'd probably do it, right? And then set it up on the table back home. So I see that, to me, that's got some beauty to it. These are the mountains near Banff, Canada. This is a place where I diverge with Mark Twain. Mark Twain's experience comes to mind in which, after he had mastered the analytic knowledge needed to pilot the Mississippi River, he discovered the river had lost its beauty. My response... you who are not geologists cannot possibly see that landscape as being more beautiful than I do. It's not possible. I may know some more things about it than you do, and you'll know these by the end of the week. The fact that this limestone is dense, hard rock, and therefore it forms cliffs, and then the sandstone and the shale is not as tough, so it erodes differently, and so you get these big slopes, and then you get into another cliff forming. This is more limestone again, and so it forms the sharp cliffs. How me knowing that somehow doesn't make this unbelievably beautiful, that's where me and Mark Twain part ways. And of course the fact that the Banff Springs Golf Course is right there, and this is the par 3 fourth hole, the Devil's Cauldron, one of the 18 most beautiful golf holes anywhere in the world. And then you got some cliff forming and junk up there, so who cares? Here we are back in the Canadian Rockies. This is between Vail and Beaver Creek at a mine site. Here's me getting paid again, out working in my blue jeans and a t-shirt with a camera in my hand in September when the leaves are turning. This is from the third level of the what Holden calls third level, what I call the East Waste Rock Pile, looking back up the valley. This, another technical piece is going to intrude here. This big U shape is classic for a glacial setting. If there'd never been a glacier in there, the valley would be much more V-shaped. This was Thanksgiving of 98. This was me getting up before going to work outside, getting paid a lot. And this was sunrise over the dining hall. That's in November some year. Not only did I work in the mountains, this is the beach in Indonesia. This is sunset over the island next to Bali, where I was on a few days off after working at the mine site, a mine site that I worked at in Indonesia. These are the kind of things that studying geology has gotten. Now, I know not everybody thinks of the mountains here or like Bali as being particularly beautiful. For those of you who think central Nebraska, you know, if that's your thing. This is south of Lindsay, Nebraska, a little bit south of Lindsay, Nebraska, which any of you who are, if you irrigate at all, Lindsay Pipe or Zimmatic Pipe gets made in Lindsay, Nebraska. Population of Lindsay is easy to remember because it's 3-2-1. Or, of course, this is near Gillette, Wyoming, where there's a bag of gold behind every tree. So again, I know sometimes I get caught up in thinking places like here are beautiful or Indonesia, but you know, I've spent my time in Gillette as well, so I can talk about that. This is the outback of Australia where I work these days. This was at the end of the day, so that's a moonrise. Beauty not of geology, but because of doing geology. Here are some kids that I met in Ghana. I was there in 2007 and 2008, besides making bad hypotheses about where the seeps were. We also went and sampled the village wells in the area where there is a proposed mine site. And this was a set of kids that I was there six different times, and I got to see these guys three or four times. And what I came to understand after a little while in Ghana was that rather than being part of my team, who you can all see in the background doing the work, the best thing I should do would be stand off to the side and draw the kids to me, because otherwise they would be hoarding around us. Because when I went to Ghana the first time, I was ready to be a minority. I wasn't ready to be a celebrity. Because when we were out in the villages, I would be there for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and in that time I might see one other Caucasian person. So when we would jump out of the truck, kids this age would come flying up and start pointing at me and saying the word Obruni, which is what Caucasian is, white means. The small toddlers would run away screaming because the word Obruni also means ghost. So they were not clear what I was, only what I was probably bad. But these kids taught me how to count in Shwe, the local dialect, and we'd play tag and chase. And again, let's just keep that between us, because if Newmont Mining found out that's the way they were spending their money, they might not let me go back. But again, it was after a while of I figured out that that was the best way that we should move forward. Here's another group of kids at another one of the well sites. There's one more person in here than you think there is, because there's just part of a head right here. He dove in at the last minute. And this is the best picture of people I've ever going to take in my life. I've already done it. And we have kid and you know, here's a youngster at the outside who's kind of at the fringes, and she's looking towards the middle to figure out what the cool kids are doing. And because they're happy, she's happy. And of course, over here, there's no way in the world that that young lady was ever going to let me not have the wall between me and her. One of these other guys tried to pick her up and put her in the picture, and she was having none of it. So what should my response be to being able to fly halfway around the world and get this photo as part of my professional career? I don't know what it is other than to tell you guys and say, if some of you study geology, you can, or you know, maybe do something cooler than that. All right, exercise will be had. We're going through, we're ticking through our bullet point list of cool things that happen if you study geology. If we do it anywhere than here, sooner or later we're gonna have to go walk around. This is me down the river here a little ways, right next to Railroad Creek. That's up at Honeymoon Heights. This is you'll see in these photos that I have from probably either Ghana or Indonesia, a fairly common pattern, which is everyone else on the team is way ahead of me, hiking through the forest. And sometimes getting to places where I can't see them anymore, which is, it's, if someone is sent as your guide, specifically to guide you, you would think that they would think that going where you can't find them anymore is probably a bad idea. And this is me at the end. This is probably at lunchtime one day. So in 94 and 96, I spent time in Indonesia hiking, and this is from a helicopter, and as part of my work, we would start at the bottom down here, hike over this big hill, and then back down the other side. And right up in here, when you'd get just before this little village, the steps would be made, and then they had fire hoses cut so that you could help yourself up that way. It was so steep. That's one of those days where I thought, what is this geology about? Sorry, another technical point here. It's like three now, isn't it? If particularly in the mountains, if you study geomorphology, what you'll learn is, as you go from the mouth of a river to the head of the river, the slope will increase. parabolically, exponentially. So that when you're down here at the mouth, it's relatively flat, but it starts to get really steep really quick, and then at the end, it's almost vertical. And so this is this is on one of my hikes up one of the creeks, showing here we are at the mouth, and it's nice, and there's a couple of my guides there. And then we start going up the creek a little bit, and then keep going up the creek, and you go from walking to walking and clambering to pure clambering to climbing to something greater than climbing. And again, this is me in relationship to my guides, where they would all go way ahead and then sit down and have a smoke, and then I'd catch up to them and they'd be about done smoking, so then they'd bolt off again. This is another one of those days where I was hiking where I thought I would much rather be selling shoes. That's me after a little bit of aerobic exercise. Here are some colleagues of mine. Not only did we do aerobic exercise, but we also do some weightlifting and other stuff. This is a bunch of colleagues of mine from URS busting up the old water diversion structure back in about 2000. When we do technical work, this little unit here is what we use to measure how much water is flowing down Railroad Creek. In the springtime, when the creek is really roaring, you need to have something that stabilizes it. That lead bomb there is about 75 pounds. So we're getting ready to run that. And here's a buddy of mine, and here's that 75 pounds that he's yarding back up on that reel. And we would move our way across the creek every 2 or 3 feet and run it back down and collect another reading and then pull it back out. So it's not just aerobic exercise. There's some other stuff you can do. And if you learn to do geology, one of the first things you'll get is a rock hammer. And beating on rocks is a good way. You get a lot of, I don't know what the, there's got to be some health benefit to dusting rocks. Community will be experienced. Even if you study geology on your own, sooner or later you will have to share it with others, either to have them check your work or fight with someone who has a different opinion to you. All of the work I've done in my professional team, you know, me doing hyperbolic signs is a plot for danger. So I had to have those data checked by someone else. And on all of the reports that we wrote about Holden, all of those went to the Forest Service, who had a consultant equivalent to us who would go through everything we wrote and say, yes, this makes sense. No, that doesn't. They check our calculations. It's all part of the business. If you're a geologist, one of the reasons that I've moved to Australia is to help in the local office down there train young geologists, young hydrogeologists. And one of the things that I've done already with folks is have young graduate, you know, 25, 26-year-old geologists come out, and we would look at samples that were laid on the ground, and we would hypothesize together. And I would say, this is what I see. Now, me trying to explain Australian geology to someone who was born and raised there is kind of funny, right? It's like me trying to explain the Bible to Judy. I may be right, but maybe we should go with those who know more. So I spend much of my time saying, here's a pile of rocks. This is what I see. What do you think? And this is where observation, I'm way better at observation now than I was 10 years ago when I came here. And it's because I spent a lot of time with Marianne Junghans, who some of you know, who's an artist. And this is where Trish, I know observation a little bit. She knows observation a lot. It's what she does. Did you listen to Matins this morning? Were there observations made in Matins this morning? Absolutely there were. When Jim Bodine gets here, what does a writer do? They observe things. So I'm a far better hydrogeologist because of people that I've met. Cliff makes observations about people. One of the differences, one of the great ways my job is easier than his is when we go out and we look at rocks, rocks won't actively lie to you. Right? Somebody comes in to see Cliff. he's got yellow stains right here, and he's got a little thing on his, and Cliff says, "Do you smoke?" "No." Or, "Used to." "Gave it up." "When?" "What time is it?" Anyway, on to community. This is me, and this goes back to 1981, 30 years ago plus a little bit. There are four of us. This was my geology mapping program.
Which one is you, Don?
Me in the ball cap right there. And we would go out and we would map the geology together. We'd split up into two teams of two, but the middle two of us, Bill and I, would go one way, and Mark and Dave would go another way. And we would go look at the geology, and at the end of the day, we would come back together, and we would sit down, and we would drink our beer or our soda. Where's my drink? There's plenty more over here if anybody wants to get up and have a second one. We'll note who you are, of course. But. This is a group of us in the fall of 1997 at the sign right down the road here. That's me right there. By the end of that program, here are the survivors. I'm still part of that team. That's good. This is us actually getting ready to do work. We didn't just come up here and pose for photos. We actually did some other things. And one of the things that we did was check for fish in Railroad Creek by shocking, using electrical current to shock the fish. And here's a bunch of us sweeping our way up the stream. We've all got our heads down because we're looking in the water to try and see the fish. That's me in the background. This is me explaining some hydrogeology to a couple of guys in Ghana. This is another team. This is the same team, other guys out in the middle of the what they would call the forest, what we would call the jungle, looking at springs and seeps. Here we are, again, community, puzzle solving, observation, exercise. You folks who live here at Holden know that sometimes community isn't all it's cracked up to be. Sometimes doesn't it feel like you're the only person working? Sometimes you feel that way because it's true. This is me down working in a stream, and there's six of us on the team. There's six or seven of us. There's five guys up there checking the football scores on their handheld phones. There's one guy taking a photo, and there's me doing work. So community, right, is, again, you Holden folk know it has its pluses and minuses.
Well, they seem to have a good community.
Well, they... You know, that I hadn't thought about it. Just need to get out of myself a little bit. Think of a larger group. And sometimes our little traveling community that I worked in would interface with a larger community. Here is a well that we were sampling and testing that was on the property of a local school. So, of course, we had a fair amount of crowd. This is a two-panel photo that I only could put one. There's a whole other that much off to the side there of kids who were interested in what we were doing. This is us at one of the, this is the team again. Here's two folks on the team. There's another guy. Part of the reason I showed this is because, you know, I always thought the grumpy old man was just an American thing, but this guy proved me wrong because he's in Ghana too. He was the guy who would shoo the little kids away from the well and make sure that everybody, it was sort of like his well, and if anybody was behaving badly, he had to interject. This is me down at the boat dock with Jim Bodine, who will be in on Wednesday, and Nancy Copeland Payton and Karen. So this is a geologist, a poet, a doctor / priest, and an artist. And so it's not just the geologists that I've run across. That first group back at the Holden photo, that was geologists and hydrologists and wildlife people and all scientists. And here's one that I'm reasonably embarrassed about, but feel in the interest of full disclosure to post here. That's me.
right there.
That's Barbara Rossen, if any of you know her. Big time Lutheran preacher and writer. That's Stacy Judula, board member with all big faint face paint whiskers on us after marching down Main Street, clapping and barking like seals and hitting a beach ball between us in the 4th of July parade. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And then again, this is some people who you might recognize from last year sitting out on the dock across the road. And again, it's what should my response be to being fortunate enough to be in, to be considered part of that group? The fact that that group is considered faculty is absurd, of course, but I'm glad to be part of it. Beer will be consumed. This is the only picture I have of me where I'm consuming beer. This is August 21st, 1973, when I turned 16. This is in Minnesota because back in, back in those days, you could buy beer legally when you were 16. That's why I went from Illinois to Minnesota. Why do geologists drink beer? Geologists carry heavy packs with rocks in them and hence get very thirsty. Some places geologists work, the water's not very good. That's true. In both Indonesia and Ghana, all the water I had was bottled. Geologists need a good imagination because often they don't have a lot of data to work with. Harry Hess, who was an early pioneer of plate tectonic theory, the sort of unifying current theory of geologic thought, and was also a rear admiral in the Naval Reserve, said geologists make better intelligence officers than physicists or chemists because they are used to making decisions based on faulty data. And I've done my share of that. We strive as hard as we can to not do that, but sometimes it just happens. This is a picture that I took in Copenhagen. This partly is because it's the only other thing I have that related to beer. And when I was there, I saw this and I thought, probably the best beer in town. And I thought, that's the best the advertisers could come up with. If people at my company, when someone called up and said, how's URS? And they said, well, we're okay. But then what I understood after speaking to people is that that's anything more than that in Denmark, and you would be being seen to boast. Right? Yeah. And so that, in the culture, that's the right. So, as you see on your handouts, or when you see the kiosk tomorrow, this is what I've thieved for the sessions tomorrow and Wednesday, which is probably the best geology lecture. Old stories will be told and new stories will be lived. This is the little hamlet of Yau Tano, Ghana, in probably August of 2008. When I was there in April of 2008, I was accosted by the drunken village chief and 10 or 12 of the big burly guys from the village. So maybe all the rest of you have been accosted by a drunken village chief in Ghana, and so this is not a big deal, but it's one of my favorite stories. And thankfully I'm here nothing really bad happened. It was all verbal interchange. But then the next time I came back and was completely terrified about going there, the village chief wasn't in the village at that point, and instead this was the reception I got. So. That's a black cobra. My guides figured that's somewhere between 2 and 3 meters long, so somewhere between 6 and 9 feet. We were going to do some work in a stream right near here, and I was last in line like always, and the first person stopped when they saw the snake, and so we all sort of collided into each other. And so I went to the first person and said, "What's going on?" And he pointed, and I didn't see anything. He said, "No, no, right there." I said, "Okay. So what is it?" "I know it's a snake." He said, "It's a black cobra." "Oh, how long do you think he is?" "Oh, 2 or 3 meters." "Oh, what should we do now?" "Leave." Which is what we did. Travel, variety, fame, and fortune may be part of the package. All these are not promised. And again, I think I have a leg up, but maybe if you guys go study geology, you may be able to do some, or even cooler than this. This is the island, this is the part of Bali called Nusa Dua, where all the resorts are. This is downtown Madrid. This is just a catalog of places that I've been able to go, mostly having somebody else pay for. That's Madrid. This is Afosu, Ghana. So this is kind of the Nebraska part of... This is Arnhem, Holland. That's the bridge in A Bridge Too Far. I've traveled by a number of different methods. Big jets to Indonesia, and then small jets or small planes to get on to the island where we worked. This is a boat that I worked on for quite a while, a fishing, diving, and surfing charter out of Bali that we also did some oceanographic work off of. Enough said. I've spent a fair amount of time riding helicopters. Not many of us have been on a crew basket. I have. The first job I worked offshore on an oil rig that was a boat. And to get the samples onto the boat, this is in Southern California, to send these back to shore, I had to take a basket that was picked up by a crane off of our boat, put over the other boat. Samples went into this lock box right here. And then I got picked back up and brought onto the boat I was working on. 30 trips and never got wet. I've stayed in a range of accommodations. This is a pondok in Indonesia, which is a big wooden platform with a tin shed on top of it, open on all sides. At the base camp we worked out of, it was much better accommodation, which is now there were bamboo woven sides to the thing, still the tin roof. And there were monkeys in the trees, the fruit trees, and every now and again they would decide that they would eat at night. And when they were done with a piece of fruit, they'd just flip it over their shoulder and it would come down 60 or 80 feet onto the tin roof of the room I was living in. So if you want to know what that's like, put a trash can over your head and then have somebody throw a grapefruit at it. Other accommodations, this is after they built the mine there. Quite nice. This is my time in Ghana. This is upstairs, or this is across the street in the hotel. I've eaten in a number of elegant dining halls. This is an open-air dining hall in Indonesia. This is the dining hall at the mine site in Ghana. And then some of the best meals I've ever had have been not in any dining hall at all. That's raw cocoa that I'm having a piece of right there, out in the forest in Ghana. This is cod and broccoli and steamed potatoes right down the road here by Sven's Bridge. One night in 2008 when we were working late, someone from the kitchen decided to put food aside for us, and somebody ferried it down to us, and on the inside I was smiling even bigger than I am in that photo. In December of 1999, in the wheelhouse of this boat, I was having sashimi and pan-fried tuna with garlic and ginger, where the tuna was about 15 minutes old. Of everybody in the Southern Hemisphere that day, I had the best meal. Because, I will show you in a minute, the rest of my, I've seen some pretty strange things. This is the first Walmart in Ghana. Oh, no, I don't know what to say. I have two photos that, to my mind, encapsulate my career and why, again, I feel so fortunate. This is me getting paid a lot of money hiking through the jungle in Indonesia, collecting data, trying to help solve a problem in community. This is me on that boat in Indonesia, probably some other time than when we had the really good meal, but that's my work uniform right there, ball cap, sunglasses, t-shirt, shorts, bare feet. What do you need to study geology? It's a short list. Curiosity, the power of observation, and common sense. Those are the only things you need. Curiosity, I've tried the bribery and cajolery, and hopefully you'll come back tomorrow because for some reason you think it's interesting. Power of observation, I can help you with that in the geologic realm, and the art people can help you even more than I can. Common sense, remember, you can observe a lot just by watching. I hope if you're here you don't feel bashful about this, but if you put in that life post, you can't study geology. Same for that. And if you're the guy who ordered this sign, then you don't have what it takes to do geology. For everybody else, that's what I have for tonight.